Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Okay, big show today because it is the biggest weekend in the National Hunt calendar in Ireland. It is the Dublin Racing Festival weekend, and as such, I'm delighted to say we've got one of the best guests we could possibly have, Johnny. It's Paul Townend. This is a pretty exciting weekend for racing fans. What's it actually like for you to be in the middle of the maelstrom?
Yeah, it's huge. I suppose it fits in, this weekend fits in lovely between Christmas and Cheltenham. And I suppose you can't let Cheltenham take from this weekend. It's such a big weekend in its own right.
How do you pick your rides, Paul?
I suppose a lot of them pick themselves, you know, just see what's going better than others in a couple of races where we have numerous entries. But it's all done by now, and I can only ride one, so I've committed to what I've committed to, and hopefully I'm right. I'm not going to be right all the time, but hopefully I can get it right more times than I get it wrong.
When you're in the middle of the decision-making process, what are you weighing up?
Everything. I suppose past form, ground. I work very closely with my agent, Kieran O'Toole, in doing that. I suppose I go off feel and what I felt at the race and what I feel at home, and he's a very good man on the book and the form that way. So we bounce ideas off each other, and you know, when it boils down to it, we usually come to an agreement. It's very rarely that we have difference of opinions.
Okay, so he's your sounding board for that when you're kind of weighing up what the form of two horses that Willie might have in a race. And in terms of like Willie's sense of what he wants, is that part of the decision making process too, or does he let you just kind of go, look, I trust you, pick whatever you want?
Yeah, of course. Willie's watching the horses every morning. You know, when we're riding them work, we're either working on our own or working in pairs or possibly three in a go, but we can only see what and go what we're seeing. He's watching every horse galloping up by him, and obviously he's a very good eye for it, and he's generally right.
So that's what's the weight then? You guys have your chat, and then Willie comes over and goes, really, I'm not so sure about that. I thought, you know, maybe you need to reconsider this a bit.
Something like that, yeah. It often goes that way. But no, in fairness to Willie, he if you ask him for his opinion, he'll give it to you, but he won't interfere in what you're thinking yourself. And of course, Ruby and David Casey are in their riding work a lot. Patrick Mullins, Danny, David. Like I rely a lot on them now as well for feedback. And you know, I think Willie's is a big team, and if once one of us is winning, it lightens the burden a small bit.
That is really interesting, because you have to kind of rely on that hive mind then to try and get the most information that you possibly can, and it must really feel like you are part of a team when you do land, when you know, if you guys all come to the kind of conclusion after a bit of a debate back and forth, or there's a bit of information from riding out during the week that makes you change your mind towards the end of the week. That must be great.
Yeah, look, we're all striving for the same result, so you know, once we're all pulling in the same direction, it's huge. It takes a lot of the pressure off it, and you know, as riders we can only ride one, so anything we can, any bit of advice we can give to someone else, we give it. And you know, if we were all trying to be Mayfainers and look after ourselves, I don't think it would add to the success Willie has.
And how has it changed now in the last couple of years since you've become the number one? Your current win rate is 34%. It's off the charts. Does that mean that there probably are times during the year, obviously not this weekend, but where you might say, look, I'm just not sure about, I don't know if I need to ride in this big handicap race. I don't know if I need to go chasing that. Like, how does that work out? Do you get to be more selective? Is that one of the privileges, I guess, of being the number one?
Very rare time. I'm in a bit of a battle with Rachel Blackmore again at the moment, so I'm not trying to let too many slip by. But no, there's a couple of times there. You know, I obviously hurt my shoulder in Fairy House a couple of weeks ago, and I had one eye on this weekend anyway that I wanted to be fit and ready for here.
Okay, you mentioned, Johnny, that he's got the best book of rides. It is an astonishingly deep couple of days of racing as well. What are you particularly looking forward to? Where should we start this conversation?
Well, it's you could start in so many places because there are basically eight Grade One races. But you know, the old what was the old Pierce Hurdle and is now the Ladbroke Hurdle. You know, that was kind of the pivot race of one of the Leopardstown fixtures, and they kind of morphed three Leopardstown cards into two race cards over the one weekend, fitted into an early February slot, and a couple of races came from other tracks as well. So basically, this became Cheltenham is over 4 days, for example, and Punchdown then is over the week, whatever. But this is over 2 days, and you've eight Grade One. So Paul has, if I'm right, 12 rides this weekend. Just looking at them there, he's riding horse of the class of Monkfish, Melon, Saldier, Shack and Poursuivre, for example, Energy Mean, Guyer Dumenil. It's just a serious amount of talent. And in fairness, sure, like this is better than Cheltenham, because Cheltenham is quite diluted in terms of handicaps, mares races, spread out over 4 days. They've been kind of mixing around with the schedule. This is real high class racing on Super Bowl weekend, and it's kind of like it's often like a run in conjunction with the Six Nations as well. So it can be a really, really exciting sporting weekend. And on the racing front, Paul has the best kind of book of mounts. And I'm interested, Paul, kind of to extrapolate in the conversation Jerry was having. What were your difficult choices this weekend? I guess if you look at the big race, the Gold Cup, that was going to be an interesting one for you. But what were your difficult choices?
Yeah, I suppose you have to put a bit of thought into them all. Like, I suppose the obvious ones, they jump out at you, like your Monkfish and Shack and Poursuivre. Like, I wasn't going to get off them, but you have to weigh up a lot of options, and you're kind of have one eye on the future, but at the same time, you want to ride what's going to win this weekend.
I say Guyer Dumenil now and Statler. Statler to me looks like a really strong stayer. It's going to be testing ground. Guyer Dumenil is stepping up in trip with a hood and very, very classy horse. Do you feel that he might just have that bit more class, or was it a tough call to make?
You know, there's definitely positives for both. The maiden hurdle in Naas the other day, the horse that finished second to Guyer Dumenil beat the horse that finished second to Statler. So,
yeah,
Guyer seemed to beat him very comprehensively. So, you know, you can read too much into all that as well, but it was just a guide. And, you know, I went up and had a walk around it and things. So you can only ride one. I'm confident in the one I'm riding.
The line is just coming in and out there, Paul. So we're just going to give you a quick call back to make sure that it's grand for the rest of the while. We may as well make that call now. So that's you're talking there, Johnny, about the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup, which goes to post at 3:40 on Sunday. It's a five-horse field, Delta Work, Kenboy, Melon, Manila Indo and the Storyteller. Like, there's not a dud in it.
No, and in fairness, when these horses clashed at Christmas, there was a much bigger field, and you know, you could argue, oh well, there are only five runners here, but it's a really fascinating race, because Delta Work and Kenboy, or Delta Work rather, and Manila Indo, they definitely think that they have a bit of unfinished business here, because Manila Indo was sent off favourite, most unlike him at Christmas. I know people said, oh, was it like it was a great race, and it was, and a Plutard beat Kenboy and Melon. My one problem with that race Christmas was two of the main horses didn't get anywhere near the finish, and I think Manila Indo would have been thereabouts. I certainly think Delta Work on general kind of form would have been thereabouts. So we didn't get to see them two horses, two of the best staying chasers in training, and with massive Gold Cup credentials this year. Later on, we didn't get to see them finish at Christmas. The chances are we will get to see them finish here, and that's why this race is intriguing. On another level, Melon was stepping up in trip at Leopardstown at Christmas. It was a major question mark for a horse that's, you know, the perennial bridesmaid. He doesn't really win very often, but he's run unbelievably well in champion hurdles and so on, just touched off by Sam Crow last year over fences at Cheltenham. And he nearly pulled it off. And then you'd Kenboy, who obviously will forever be associated with David Mullins, who we spoke to 2 weeks ago. He nearly pulled it off as well, despite the fact that it looked like the ground might be quite testing for him. So even though there are only five runners, it's really fascinating. And obviously Rachel Blackmore, she'll be hoping that she just has better luck, because the look she's had with Henry de Bromhead and the tune she's getting out of this horse, it was really unexpected that Manila Indo will do what he did. And almost the same with Delta Work, that he would unseat. And Jack Kennedy is back on Delta Work now, which is another intriguing aspect of that. And Gordon Elliott has been talking, you know, up Jack Kennedy's role. And essentially in a five-horse race, the storyteller is hard to fancy. You're getting 4-1, maybe 9-2 about Delta Work, who's a great record in this race. So lots of interesting betting angles to it. And Paul had a tough choice here because, to be honest, Mellon and Kenboy, very, very difficult to split.
Yeah, and isn't the point about this race that you could run this race this Sunday, you could run it the following Sunday, you could run it the Sunday after. You'd have different results in each of those three races and you would be able to retrospectively explain why that happened.
Yeah, and that's with only, like, probably four, maybe five, but probably only four realistic winners. I don't know what it is, but just, you know, we're both living in the east of the country. It's been a lot of rain this week and there's going to be more rain. I think this is, you know, there was a bit of heavy in the ground, I think, yesterday. Maybe that dried out a small bit. This is going to be testing ground by Leopardstown standards. And with that in mind, I still don't really like Kenboy over a stamina-sapping 3 miles, which is going to be more the case here than what was a sort of strange enough race at Christmas and similar enough comments to Mellon, who was kind of run out of a close home, having jumped brilliantly at Christmas. I'd be confident enough that Manella Indo or Delta Work, that one of them will win this and that Willie might struggle to win it, but Paul will obviously be hoping for something different.
Yeah, we're going to get him back in just a second. In terms of the other stuff that's happening that maybe aren't connected to Paul's Book of Rides that we can come back to in a moment. What else are you looking at over the course of the weekend, Johnny? Because, you know, as you said, like literally every race is a deep field with some top quality horses in them.
Yeah, it's quite like four grade ones. And, you know, you do like there's probably an issue with racing at the moment. There might be too many graded races and, you know, not enough kind of graded handicaps. And maybe the grade ones kind of allow horses to keep each other a little bit apart, but it's not the case really this weekend. And I suppose the champion hurdle race Chanel Farm Irish Champion Hurdle on Saturday with Honeysuckle bidding to continue this incredible winning run under the aforementioned Rachel Blackmore. I think this is the most tactically intriguing race maybe of the 2 days because Honeysuckle is vulnerable over 2 miles against the males. Full stop. All her form suggests that she might be kind of keeping a bit to herself and she's been really, really strong at the end of her races and she's just done enough, whether it's beating Benny Diadieu, whether it's beating Darver Star, she's done enough. But if you look at her bare form, she really isn't good enough to be 11-8 favourite running against the likes of Sharjah, who wins so often around Leopardstown. Saldier, who's a mount of Paul, I'd be intrigued to hear what he says about him. He's one of my fancies at a price the weekend. And Sam Ra, who was obviously so impressive for Willie Mullins at Cheltenham last year, but doesn't really seem to jump well enough at this level. Then you bring in Petit Mouchoir, who of course ran so well in the race last year behind Honeysuckle. And the enigmatic Abacadabra, who basically probably should have beaten Shishkin last year, but remains something of a soft finisher, would probably want better ground. How does Rachel size up her options here? Because she knows she's on a horse who basically wants further. She knows she's on a horse who wants to be prominent, but she's not. She knows she doesn't want to be on a horse who's going gunning up front against Petit Mouchoir. So it'll be the likes of Patrick Mullins and Sharjah, the deadly duo, sitting in behind. But I think Paul Ansaldi is fascinating. He's only just turned 7 for a horse being around for a long time. He's only effectively had one proper shot at senior hurdling, and that's when he beat Petit Mouchoir readily last season. Form that's every bit as good as the hot favourite has shown. And I'd be interested to see what Paul says about his comeback run, because for me, he just got very, very tired. And essentially, I think he looked after him as well. As much as he's beaten 31 lengths, he was actually there at the second last and just blew up. It was his first run in over a year. And I've spent like maybe 2 or 3 minutes there just half discussing one race. That's how good this racing is this weekend.
Yeah, well, let's stick with that one. I think we've Paul's back with this. So, Paul, we were talking about Salia there. You probably heard what Johnny was saying. What did you make of it?
Yeah, sorry about that, lads. I hope I ride a couple of winners. I might be able to pay the bill here next week. Honeysuckle's exceptional, I suppose. But Saldir, I suppose, as Johnny pointed out, he didn't run as bad as his finishing position is at Christmas, I thought. And I think he's open to improve again. It's nice to get a second racehorse run into him quickly.
In relation to Honeysuckle, Paul, how do you weigh her up? Because, like, you know her well from Cheltenham last year. She's an unbelievable will to win, but this is tough.
Yeah, she's a very, very good mare, and she'll handle the ground, she'll handle the track. It'll be a tricky one for Rachel, as you were saying, where she's going to put her and what she's going to do with her. But you know, if she's as good as they think she is, she can probably get herself out of trouble, you know. But she'll have to improve on her first run this year.
It's funny as well, the price, like, say San Ra is like an 8-1 shot here. He was sent off a 13-8 favourite when it's not like he was disgraced at Leopardstown at Christmas. And the fact that he's had, what, like, if you, the Tipperary one was fair enough, but like he's since he's actually stepped up, he's only had two proper goes at senior hurling really. When he should have probably beaten Abercadabra, so he was a bit fresh. He wasn't beaten that far the last day. And what's he been like at home? Because he's a horse of so much ability. Maybe his jumping hasn't been quite up to scratch at this level.
Yeah. It's just a huge step up into this into this group of horses.
Is that jumping wise or
everything, the speed at which they race at, a mistake at this level, you know, costs you so much. You see it with the juveniles stepping up every year, and you see it with just the novices, because one slight mistake can put you completely out of a race. You have to learn how to race with these, jump with them, and do everything right.
Is this the thing as well? Like, I suppose if you could explain this maybe, Paul, to people who are listening in on Off the Ball, maybe they're driving home this evening and they're kind of, maybe they've a half an interest in racing. This is a six-runner race run over 2 miles. But there's an awful lot going on, isn't there? In your head, in the head of the other jockeys, it's putting a strain on horses as well to do things right, because they're going as fast as they can on difficult ground over 2 miles. And tactically as well, I guess you're all sort of taking an eye on what's going on elsewhere in the race and wondering when is the right time to pounce and go for home.
Yeah, like I suppose the best way, the easiest way to get a horse beat is go too fast for yourself. So the smaller runner races are often a lot harder to weigh up and to get tactically right. If you're in a big runner handicap where they jump out and go a gallop, you can put yourself in the position you want. But no, there'll be plenty of cat and mouse in a small runner race like that. And you know, you can have a position, miss a hurdle, and you're not going, the position isn't going to be there when you land and get going again. You have the top riders in it, and it's going to be as sharp as you like.
Have you got much better at judging that now over the last couple of years, or is that something that you kind of, you learn as a 15, 16, 17 year old and just hone it?
I suppose you make the mistakes and you try not to make them again is the best way of learning. Yeah, hopefully I'm improving. And then when you say that, if you're on the best horse, it usually works out for you anyway. So, the best, all you can do is your homework, work out what you think everyone's going to do before they go out, and work out what's the best thing to do on your own horse.
I was thinking about that, just, you know, what would be interesting to ask you about was specifically, can you be in good form, ride really well, lose a race and still give yourself kind of, actually, you know what, I did everything I could? And is there a flip side to that where you ride badly and win and are like, geez, I'm really unhappy with that?
I think it's hard to be happy when you lose, because you always want another go at it. You can get away with riding a winner that you haven't given a good ride, and you think, okay, move on, we got away with that one. But I don't really fall into the category of, oh, I got beat, there's nothing else I could have done. I always think you can improve and learn on whatever you're doing.
Right. Even if the horse wasn't good enough to win that race, you're still kind of not beating yourself up, but certainly there's a level of self-analysis that you'll continue to do irrespective of whether or not you gave it as good a ride. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have to take out of it what you could do the next time to try and get a bit closer. So, yeah, obviously, you're not going to win every race. You're not on the best horse in every race. But you want to learn and, you know, I suppose, pick up the characteristics of different horses that you're riding against in these top races every day, and just try and figure out what's their weak spot, or how can you get closer to them, or try and beat them.
And how do you actually pay attention to what the other horses are doing while at the same time minding your horse in the race? How much of the other horses, is it just what's exactly right beside you, or can you... Do you know,
I suppose I do plenty of homework on it, and I'd analyse races afterwards and before I'm going out to riding them the night before and things. So I'd like to think I have a fair idea what the majority of horses will do in a race, and obviously they're going to change. People are going to change their plans and things. You know, their plans could be gone out the window jumping the first, but if you have an idea of what you're up against, nine times out of ten, it's gonna fall more or less to what you think is gonna happen.
Okay, so they kind of have a pattern that you'll diagnose through your analysis, and then when you're in the race, you'll go, that horse is in that pattern that I expected to be. So I have a fair idea where that's gonna finish.
It's nice to follow one and know, right, if this is a faster horse than mine, or if this horse stays better than mine, that you know when to check or make your challenge, or you know if it is farm on good ground and it's running very heavy ground and it's running free, you know, you're going to put a bit of, you're going to test the stamina a little bit.
That's the chess, essentially, like the human aspect of it and the horse aspect of it are when you're actually in the middle of the race. But the research, when that research comes off and you win a race by a short head, that must be unbelievably fulfilling, that like you did the hours, you did the study.
Yeah, and it's I suppose it's like we're professionals at what we do, and I think it's expected of us to do that and to give ourselves and our owners and trainers that are employing us the best chance of winning.
The thing is that everybody else is a professional in the race as well, so they're all thinking the exact same thing. But it's when the plan comes off and maybe you're on a horse that isn't better than the other horses in those races that you've mapped out what's going to happen, and that happens, that must be very fulfilling.
It is. It's nice to get it right, but I kind of expected of myself to know that anyway. So yeah, that's the way I like to approach them. And then there's riders that ride purely off feel, and that can work for them because you can obviously overanalyze everything. But I'd rather know than be kicking myself afterwards.
Fair enough. And the whole aspect of feel then, how much of that do you rely on? And how much do you use, like in the middle of a race, if everything's gone completely against what you anticipated?
Out the window, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that's all experience then, to adapt to certain situations. And you can do all the homework in the world, I suppose. And you know, sure as God, now I go out in the first race and it'll all be thrown out the window tomorrow. But no, you have to adapt to these things. It's a sport too, and you're dealing with animals. So practice makes perfect.
Yeah, and that's why we love it. Then just before we get back to some of the races, the race for champion jockey, is that something at the start of the year you officially, you know, in your head and kind of to the yard say, right, this is one of our targets this year?
No, I think it's hard to set it as a target because you need look throughout the whole season. You need to rack up plenty of winners during the summer, because obviously it gets far more competitive and the good horses come out in the winter and you have the big festivals. It's harder to rack up high numbers of winners, but I think everyone sets out and would love to be champion jockey. Fortunately, I'm in the position that once I stay safe, I'm in a position to challenge for it, and it's something I'd really love to win again this year.
Yeah, if we do get back to racing, Paul, this brings us on to Shaq and Pourceau in the 135. Mick Fitzgerald famously said winning the Grand National was better than sex. Well, is Shaq and Pourceau up there in that regard? Riding this lad, it must be just the best crack ever. 2 miles, flat out. I don't want you to get too intimate here, but...
it's the middle of the afternoon, Johnny.
I don't know who you've been sleeping with, Johnny, but my experiences are a little different than riding a race horse around the field.
Talk to me about Shaq and Pourceau.
Look, he's electric. The swagger he showed and the way he moved through the race at Christmas was exceptional. You throw Min in there now for this race, and it's going to be a tough test again. He beat him in the race last year, but we'll need everything to go right again.
You're kind of going on the visuals here in terms of just watching him. And I don't know, he seems to have a breathtaking ability to get from A to B. I remember in RTE Christmas, they had Sean Flanagan's kind of jockey cam. He was riding Put the Kettle On. So you could see Notebook and Shaq and Pourceau ahead. And it was very obvious just watching on the jockey cam how much ground Shaq and Pourceau was making up. Have you ever ridden anything that maybe jumps with the efficiency of him, or what is it that sets him apart?
Yeah, it's the power, I suppose, and it's just so easy and natural to him. And in saying that, he's very clever and assured of what he's doing. So it's what you want in a real two-miler. You want them to take on fences. When you ask him, like the second last of Christmas, He was good and long at it, but brave and away from the back of it. So he can just travel at that speed, and that allows him to stand off a bit further than other horses, I think.
A horse is probably not a million miles off him in many regards, as Inner Jameen, in terms of the way he goes about things. He's running the Ark of the Patrick Warden, Coast Listers, Irish Ark, and novice on the following race. Obviously, he was dropping back in trip at Nace, but he's been pretty spectacular. What have you made of him? Because the strides he's made so far, he looks exceptional, even as a novice. And again, it's a good race, but it's very hard to pick a hole in him.
It is a proper race, and it'll be run at a very high tempo, I think. But he jumps similar to Shaqin, in that he takes him on very well. The ground was very heavy when he dropped back to 2 miles in Nace. So, you know, if he can, I think he'll be able to jump with them. That'll keep him in the race, and, you know, stamina, he won't lack on that front.
That brings us kind of nicely on to Sunday as well, which, you know, it's kind of hard to pick which is the best of the two cards. I guess the four grade ones both days. If we start off with the Spring Juvenile Hurdle, which it's interesting because obviously there are a couple of notable non-runners here or whatever, but would Umdor have won the last day when you rode him at Fairy House, and does he need to maybe settle better in a race of this nature? Obviously, it's going to be quite testing, but it's still an intriguing race, obviously, with Calixios in it and St. Sam, your stablemate.
Yeah, it's a good race and had Orr thrown in there as well. So I thought I was going to get the better of Robbie. In Fairy House when he fell, Robbie kind of taught the same. No, he hit the line very well that day, but we were still a long way clear of the third. So I just thought that was a strong bit of form. I thought he was good school during the week. The fall didn't seem to have impacted him at all. So you know, it's going to be hard to beat Gordon's horse. He sets the standard in this, and had Orl improved plenty for his first run in Leopardstown as well.
That's interesting, because yeah, he's definitely no back number. The Chanel Farm and Novice Hurdle, then you're right, appreciated one of the bankers. Ireland nearly always seems to have a banker if Nicky Henderson doesn't for the Supreme or whatever, but for a long way prior to that, this horse looks like he's going to be odds on favourable. But this is the race I was mentioning at start. 16 runners, is that any concern for you in a 2 mile Novice Hurdle grade one? You wouldn't be expecting that something could possibly go wrong. There's nothing to do with appreciated himself.
Obviously, it's not the normal, I suppose, to see that many lining up, but it's good to see them, everyone supporting the race here and the weekend. It shows how important the weekend is. I think it would be worse if we were riding a horse that we had to do a certain tactic on. He seems fairly simple, appreciated, and we'll be keeping it as simple as we can. He probably surprised me with the manner he won it at Leopardstown, and if we can get him there in as good a form on Sunday, I think he'll take a lot of beating.
For stuff like that, sorry, Johnny, just on that, when there is a bigger field and you say keep it simple, is that like you don't overcomplicate things, but you just have to be aware that there are environmental issues in each race where there's going to be loads of young, giddy horses in this. It's a big field. You just be a little bit calm early on. Is that all that you need to worry about when it comes to something like that?
Yeah, we'll... you know, you don't want to drop out last and have to pass 15 of them either. So, you know, as I said earlier, the easiest way to get one beat then is go too fast. So you have to find a happy medium. But, you know, it's not like he's a very, very free horse that he has to drop out and get cover at the back or anything like that. So I think we'll be able to put him where I want, and he should travel within himself.
Do jockeys have a kind of unconsciousness that comes over them in the middle of a race, like, or are you constantly, is it different from other sports where you actually completely have to be aware of everything that's happening? You know, the best footballers are kind of, they get the ball they give it, they don't think about it too much. It's just that you're in a state of flow, whereas there's a lot of calculation going on, particularly with in a race like this, and it's a bunch of young horses who you don't know how they're going to react, or actually is the best thing to do to be in a completely unconscious state?
It you have to keep it simple and keep it flowing as well, though. You've obviously your idea going out of what you want to do, but you can't make a big drastic move in the middle of a race either and knock yourself off your stride or you know, set your horse alight or anything like that. So you I suppose that comes down to the homework side of it too, that you want to be where you think you have the best position for your horse and just let it flow from there.
And for the races where the speed is much higher, are they a different experience from your perspective? Do you experience that race differently from like a 3.5 mile steeplechase, for example?
I suppose the 2 mile chasers, they can go at that speed, whereas the 3.5 mile chaser obviously can't go at that speed, but he's going to be at the, I suppose, you know, going as quick as he can to get home as well. So he'll be close to his limits, the same as the 2 miler will, albeit you're going at completely different speeds. The horse can only go as fast as they can. So what's fast for one horse isn't for another.
And it's the same experience for you in both of those instances.
Yeah, things happen a bit slower in a 3.5 mile race than a 2 mile race. All right, you have a bit longer to sort things out. It won't be as split second, but it's similar. You have to ride the horse to suit whatever race you're in and to suit the horse you're on.
And is it more exciting to race in the 2 mile where they're going that crazy gallop?
I suppose it is if you're on a good jumper, and it's not that fun if you're on a bad jumper.
That's fair enough.
It's, you know, like we've done a bit of cycling, Jerry. You can imagine going downhill on something at roughly 50, 60 kilometers an hour and just being thrown off it. It's not that dissimilar to that. If you're thrown off over 2 miles, you're dealing with extreme danger here. These are, you know, you're jumping obstacles and a horse maybe that could jump better, and you're going as fast as 2 mile horses can go. Like, I don't think people appreciate that at times, how, but I guess, Paul, that is the thrill of it as well.
It is, but I suppose, like, I wouldn't get up on a motorbike because the motorbike doesn't have a brain. If you press the accelerator or pull the accelerator, whatever it is, that bike will go as fast as you want to go. Whereas the horse has a brain, the majority of them don't want to hurt themselves either. So once you're kind of singing off the same hymn sheet, you're okay. Whereas a motocross rider or someone like that, you know, they're in... If they want the bike to take on a wall, it'll run straight into the wall.
I was in actually a fish shop in Rathmines there, and they've maybe missed a trick on not having a special on monkfish this weekend. But maybe when he becomes a Gold Cup contender, the fish shops around Dublin will be doing specials on monkfish because he's a special, special horse. Is he the quintessential top class day and chaser? Can pick a hole in him, just finds plenty for pressure at Cheltenham last year, pulled it out of the fire. Pulled away from latest exhibition at Leopardstown. Are you any way concerned about dropping back and tripping the flow gas novice chase? This horse is just beautiful, isn't he? He's just got so much going for him.
He is. He's still a young horse too, and he has plenty to learn still. I taught himself in latest exhibition straight after the race in Leopardstown that there were two proper horses, and there is very little between them. So ideally, you know, you don't want to drop back and trip, but it might be all for the best going forward. So the race was there, and the good ones seem to overcome little changes in trip and things like that. So hopefully he is as good as I think he might be.
Yeah, he's and just how would you describe him as physically? I don't know. I'm not sure I've seen him in the flesh, or haven't seen him in the flesh in a while anyway, but on the TV he sort of takes your breath away.
Yeah, he's a big horse. He was a big, raw, immature individual last year, and I think he's still growing up. I think it was just ability that got him through last year and won in Cheltenham. You know, he got headed at the back of the last, and, you know, he was pricking his ears all the way down the straight. When I gave him a slap, he took off again. You know, he thought his job was done when he was in front. So he's learning the whole time. He made the run and then in his two chases. So, you know, he's grown up... in maturity and everything like that as well.
When you were talking earlier when you were talking earlier on about picking horses for the future, obviously Monkfish is a horse with a reputation. There are obviously other horses that you kind of think, this horse might get beaten today, but if I build this relationship with them now, is that ever in your thinking that, you know, this horse has the potential to be a superstar, or you've spotted something that maybe other people haven't?
There's loads of that, and you'll get it wrong. You know, that's the fun part of the novices is seeing what improves from one run to the next, and what doesn't. Something will improve a lot more than you think it will, and some won't improve as much as you think they will. So I suppose that's the fun part with the novices.
Sorry, Johnny, go on ahead there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is Mellon the... This might sound a bit daft now, you're right, in a 7-2 shot in a 5-runner chase at grade one level, but is he the most tactically challenging ride that you have this weekend?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
No, I don't think so. I have a couple of ideas and I'll study that a bit more. We'll worry on the first day first and then get to them. But no, I don't.
You're sitting on the fence now, Paul. You're holding it all in. You're keeping the state secrets.
I'm not going to tell everyone, am I, what I'm going to do on him. So,
what have you in mind in terms of his performance at Christmas? Because he was his first shot at 3 miles and he nearly pulled it off and he jumped unreal well.
He did, yeah. And, you know, if you stop it at the second last, himself and Kemboy, it's hard to see something coming and beating the two of them. So, no, maybe we've been running him over the wrong trip all along. And 3 miles is bringing out a bit more improvement in him. So we'll just see what everyone else is going to do as well.
I get the sense you're looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to the weekend as a whole, to be honest. I can't wait to get up there tomorrow and get down to the start in the first one. You know, every race is going to come hot and heavy. You know, half an hour turnaround. So whether you're after winning or losing, whether you've given it a good ride or a bad ride, it's putting that behind you and moving forward. And it's just going to be a huge weekend. And I hope it can be a successful one.
If you're to have a 5 each way in one of your handicap selections, what would be your pick of them?
They're pretty hot handicaps. So I don't know. I'm not a betting man, and I don't know what's value in there. But I'll be doing the best I can on them all.
Do you use nerves? Do you like being a little bit nervous? Do you like having some little butterflies before the big races, just to remind you that, you know what, this isn't every day?
You do. I think it sharpens you up a bit. I think if you're not anxious, I suppose, rather than nervous, or if you channel that energy correctly, I think it's huge. I think it sharpens you up. And if you go out there not caring or worrying about it, you know, you can just be a bit sluggish in the rest.
Yeah. And I think all the great sports people always talk about having just a little bit of something going on in their head or in their stomach when the moment comes, so that the body is aware this is something.
Yeah, I suppose adrenaline is huge. Like, and I don't think too many people that aren't jockeys in the world feel adrenaline like we do. You know, it goes to show when you get a fall and you could be seriously injured that you don't even feel it until the adrenaline goes out of you. So that's the intensity it is. And it's a drug, and you know, you can get addicted to that adrenaline buzz as well.
John Giles used to talk about being completely wired in the middle of the night after games, particularly the 3 o'clock Saturday kickoffs. He'd be, you know, Sunday morning, he'd still be awake, kind of staring at the walls, because he'd got so high in front of those massive crowds in the 60s. What's that like, actually, after a weekend like this, where the races are coming hot and heavy?
I don't think I'll have any trouble sleeping Sunday night anyway, unless things have gone very, very badly. We leave it all in the field. Maybe John Joyce needed to try a little bit harder.
So you'll be physically exhausted, like completely shattered at the end of the racing. Yeah,
physically and mentally. It's draining. So I'll be looking forward to a good sleep on Sunday night. But I suppose, you know, planning this and thinking of this, you're knocking ideas around for the last fortnight, and you're keeping an eye on what's happening and what's going well and what isn't. So I suppose that's why I'm saying I just can't wait to get down to the start and get it going, and, you know, see how we get on.
I think Jazzy couldn't switch off. That was the bit. It was like, you know, replaying stuff, and that the adrenaline wouldn't
be gone out of his system. Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. And all joking aside, I can appreciate that too, because you know, it is such a high, and as sports people, and I can only speak as a jockey, because I've never been anything else, obviously. So it's huge, like the adrenaline buzz, and you know, you just get you get in the bubble, and you don't see what's going on outside it.
Listen, I hope it goes really, really well for you this weekend, Paul. Thanks a million for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Cheers, lads.
That's really interesting stuff there, Johnny. And great to get the insight so close to the start of a massive, massive weekend of racing on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, like it's kind of, I was thinking of Joe Biden there, you know, in the sense of that, how long he had to wait to become the leader of the US, and all these people in various walks of life who kind of wait in the wings for their chance. And Paul knew that he had to do that with Ruby Walsh, and now he, you know, he has the best job in racing. It does have kind of, I suppose maybe Brian Cooper spoke about this a bit when he was a Jigginstone rider, that when you get it wrong, it does great with you, and you have to deal with that. And there's every chance Paul will be on the wrong horse in one or two races this weekend, because there are so many variables at play that, you know, you can't definitively predict the outcome whether you're on the horse or not. So there are a couple of ones this weekend that would have been close. But I hope that for the non-racing person maybe listening in, that he gave, and I certainly think he did, he gave an insight into what's going on when you're planning for races like this, because as much as they happen over the course of a few minutes, there's so much going on, and he has a plan there. It's like, you know, he's going to pick 11 players in terms of Mellon on Sunday, but he's not telling you how they're lining out tactically, and maybe he's going 3-5-2, or maybe he's going 4 at the back, maybe he's doing this or that, but he has a plan in his mind for Mellon, and we just have to guess what that is. And there's a bit of cat and mouse there against the other jockeys, because he's stepping up in trip, and he's a blank canvas at 3 miles, but there's certainly question marks as to whether he wants 3 miles. What will the ground be like? You know, they won't know that until they ride in it in the first race at Leopardstown. Leopardstown is, you know, one of the driest tracks in Ireland traditionally, but rain is rain, and we've had plenty of that in Dublin. All these things have to be taken into consideration. There isn't a crowd at the meeting as well, so that aspect is slightly taken away, but the adrenaline rush will be high. And I think he speaks good game, but he certainly talks the talk and can walk the walk. And he's probably lucky that I think maybe David Mullins would have, you know, illustrated this when we had him on. Like, Willie Mullins is just a great person to ride for. He's not he's not going to give you an earful unless you absolutely deserve it. And Paul is very laid back, and I think that came across there. It's I have to say, it's really gotten me buzzing for the weekend just listening to him there, because he is 12 rides, but we have 16 races to kind of sink our teeth into as well.
Yeah, Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing, and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. A couple of things about the racing festival. So this is obviously the fourth year of it. 8 grade one across the 2 days. Here's an interesting stat as well in terms of Cheltenham. The Dublin Racing Festival has provided 12 winners in 3 years. The Cheltenham January Trials have provided 9 winners in 3 years. And Christmas at Leopardstown has provided 4 winners in 3 years. So, you know, it as we've said, it falls nicely between Christmas and Cheltenham, but it's a very clear indicator. If you've got something that's going really well right now, then these are really top quality horses, and they have a good chance of following up on that as well. So I do want to talk about this as well. It's you versus me in our Tote 10 to Follow competition for the Irish Injured Jockeys Fund at the Dublin Racing
Big
Festival.
Big weekend for us, Ger.
I am looking forward to this weekend, Johnny. It pays to read the rules. Did you know that there are bonus points for both the Chanel Pharma Irish Champion Hurdle and the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup this weekend?
To paraphrase Frank Drebin, I realise that now.
16 points separate. You're ahead by 16 points. Let's just check here. In the bonus points for the Irish Champion Hurdle, in the Irish Champion Hurdle, you have one horse, Honeysuckle. I have Honeysuckle, Sharjah, Abracadabras, and Saldier. Super bonus points and 4 entrants. And then for the...
You have 4 horses in that race. So you 10 horses and you picked 4 two-mile hurdlers.
I went for the ones that were going to be doubling up for this weekend. I looked at the rules and I was like, hang on a second, I got to give myself a chance here. In the Gold Cup, you've got Manila Indo. I've got Kenboy and Delta Work. So, yeah, I've given myself...
I think I'm going to beat you there.
Give myself a shout here. Yeah, fair enough, but I'm banking on my double points coming from the Champion Hurdle. And sure, look, it's, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So, but yeah,
no,
there
we
is...
don't. But yeah, fascinating stuff. And in fairness, like, this is you can sometimes get a lot of these grade one races where they're not like overly interesting, because I know there might be 2 horses in them, but all of the grade one races this weekend, even with the odds on favorites, they have an awful lot going for them in terms of just whether you're on the favor, whether you're not, but like making a case for horses elsewhere, the ground. And I genuinely think this is a really significant Dublin Racing Festival, because this is a strange year, and March is not what it was. And I mean that, it's not what it was. This is a massive meeting by itself. And I can't wait. It's going to be intriguing. We're all at home, but this isn't a bad weekend to be at home.
No, absolutely. It's not a bad weekend to be sitting on the couch watching the telly. Tune in and enjoy. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.